Blog Talk Radio.
TV aristocrat pulling rabbits from his hat. Oh, well, I didn't know it worked like that. Sounds great until you do the math. And now people waking up, poking heads out of their stuff. What an expensive turtle shell. It was probably just as well, because I don't want to be the machine powered by the American dream. Now the people want the truth, but the truth, it can't be found. Well, it's just an artifact. To your son, and I watched as it lulled him to sleep with the hypnotic hum of the machine.
Welcome to the Legacy Forum. This is Robin and Harry Chaudhry. We are committed to give our best and to make this world a better place. Every week we do it a little differently. We have guests on our show. We provide tidbits of information that we hope will help you. We provide incredible music, like you were just listening to Amy Hendrickson, The Machine. You know, she's a friend of ours, a local artist in St. Augustine, Florida. Just shout out to Amy Hendrickson. You can call us if you're listening to us now on the computer. If you have a question, remember, you can dial us at 347-677-0699. 347-677-0699. And if you're hanging on the phone and you don't want to use any more minutes, you can find us on the Internet by going to blogtalkradio.com. We're coming to you again tonight from Fort Collins, Colorado. Happy Mother's Day, a day late to all you mothers out there listening. Great day yesterday. Mothers of four-legged animals, mothers of two-legged kids that act like four-legged animals, or you just have the heart of a mother. We hope you had a great day yesterday. I have to say that I did. I have to say that somehow or another, my daughter was able to request a white, snowy Mother's Day for me. Being a Florida girl, hey, I'm not used to that. There's some snow that I've skied in, and that's been about it. So this was a unique experience for me. She came in about 6:30 yesterday morning and said, "It's snowing, it's snowing." It sounded like when she was little and it was Christmas morning. So it was quite a treat. Then later we went to the Italian restaurant down in Old Town, Bassetti's, a nice family-owned Italian restaurant in Old Town on College Street. So hats off to Bassetti's. It was a wonderful experience as always. So if you're ever in the Fort Collins area, drop by. You're safe to just close your eyes, point to the menu, and say, "I'll have that." Everything I've ever tried there has been tremendous. So after the wonderful lunch, and then we went to a CSU cello concert. That was incredible. These students were so talented. They worked very hard this semester, refining skills, learning more about their craft, and they did a beautiful, beautiful recital last night. So hats off to the CSU celloists. Totally enjoyed that. So we had a little snow hanging around this morning. Harry and I took off, did a little scenic driving, and even had a snowball fight. Of course, I won. Well, not really, but that's the story I'll tell. And other than that, he's worked really hard between breaks today, getting ready for the show tonight. We've got a great guest lined up. Hang tight. She'll be with us in just a moment. But first of all, we know, as with every week, Harry has researched and prepared and napped along the way. So after many hours of rest, Harry has prepared this week's Things to Know.
Well, know this. A Republican Christian conservative wants to repeal the 19th Amendment and ban women from voting based upon biblical principles. Last Thursday, David Borton, president of Wall Builders, said, "Family government precedes civil government, and you watch that as the colonialists came to America, they voted by families." And you have to remember back then, husband and wife, I mean, the two were considered one. That is a biblical precept. That is family, and that is voting. And so the head of the family is traditionally considered to be the husband, and even biblically still considered to be so. Now, Barton asserts that denying women the right to vote is necessary for a strong culture and strong society, and it was based on strong family that preceded government. Now, Ann Coulter, who is not one of my heroes, but she recently said, and I quote, "I think women should be armed but should not vote. Women have no capacity to understand how money is earned. They have a lot of ideas on how to spend it. It's always more money on education, more money on child care, more money on daycare." You know, friends, apparently the agenda for God-fearing conservatives is to repeal the 19th Amendment because women do not have the capacity to understand matters that require a vote. Know this. Chief Justice Roy Moore of the Alabama Supreme Court declared that the First Amendment only applies to Christians because, now let me get this right, he said Buddha didn't create us. Muhammad didn't create us. It was the God of the Holy Scriptures who created us. He later said that the pursuit of happiness meant following God's laws because you can't be happy unless you follow God's laws. And if you follow God's laws, you can't help but be happy. Know this. Surprise. America's retirement mecca is not Florida. Florida and Arizona definitely have the weather going for them. But when it comes to quality of life, South Dakota tops the new list of best states for retirement from Bankrate.com. Know this. Some studies have linked pesticide exposure to Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. This year's pesticides Dirty Dozen includes apples, strawberries, grapes, celery, peaches, spinach, sweet bell peppers, imported nectarines, cucumbers, cherry tomatoes, imported snap beans, and potatoes. Now, let's talk of some good news. This year's clean 15 are avocados, sweet corn, pineapples, cabbage, frozen sweet peas, onions, asparagus, mangoes, papayas, kiwi, eggplant, grapefruit, cantaloupe, cauliflower, and sweet potatoes. Know this. The New England Journal of Medicine called out the powerful American gun lobby for opposing the nomination for the top doctor of our country, calling it a new form of political blackmail. This is the first time that the NRA has flexed its political muscle over the appointment of a surgeon general. By obstructing the president's nomination of Dr. Murtha as surgeon general, the NRA is taking its single-issue political blackmail to a new level. Now, know this. Have the people of Utah become so self-centered and un-American that they will destroy history for a few moments of thrills? In San Juan County, Commissioner Philip Lehman is angry that the Bureau of Land Management is protecting 2,000-year-old ruins. Now, if there's one thing that will get your point across and persuade the general public to support your cause, it's driving a bunch of ATVs through Native American ruins and burial sites. You see, last week a handful of armed people rode their ATVs on land with historical ruins. This canyon, people, is open to hikers and horseback riders, but not ATVs. Now, the local commissioner is angry that the federal government didn't do their diligence by asking his permission to protect property on federal land. Now, how self-centered can we become? A Navajo warrior ceremony for returning veterans had to be rescheduled. You know, I guess riding ATVs is far more important than our war veterans. Also, the damage to archaeological sites is permanent, and the information about collective past is then lost forever. Well, I guess that's about how self-centered those people in Utah can be. Well, baby, I hope I've earned my keep for the week, and, you know, if you're not living a life that others can remember, then what kind of life are you living? I'm going back and take a nap.
I think you should. I do want to say that many of the things, you know, the things that Harry has found in his research this week are things that make me a little nervous, are things that we do need to know. Even to my friends out there that are listening that say, well, I just don't like politics. I'm just not into politics. Again, the spin, the reason that we do our show is to provide positivity. So don't take any of these things negatively. Just know that you positively can make an impact. You can make your voice be heard. So if you do hear any of these know this items, first of all, know that they do not express the opinions of Harry and myself necessarily. But just be aware, a lot of things do go on behind the doors of our government offices that we're not aware of unless you do get out, do a little research, and then just pay attention when you vote. Again, here we come tonight with yet another astounding guest. As we've traveled, we have had the pleasure to meet so many interesting people to come to you broadcasting from different establishments that we find along our travels. Well, about a month ago, we were in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Harry's hometown, and there is a beautiful place on Peoria down around that area, lots of little shops, lots of businesses. And, oh, I don't know, about 2 years ago we were in Tulsa and I stumbled into an early morning, like 6:30 in the morning class, the yoga room. Fell in love with this place. And so, of course, when we went back this year, that was all about it. I had to go back to the yoga room. And that I did. I think I went about, 13 times in about 20 days. So, Harry, can you plug that up for me? yeah, it's a live radio show. So I went about 13 times in about 20 days, and oh, how I wish that I was close to the yoga room now, but I'm not, but I am close. You're all close to the owner of the yoga room. That is our guest tonight, our beautiful Nicole Peltier. Nicole studied at Mount Madonna Center in the Santa Cruz Mountains of California in 2000. She and Tom Tobias opened the yoga room in 2001. Her classes are so creative and inclusive. All students seem to benefit and enjoy her unique style of teaching. I know I did. She enjoys combining music of all kinds with her flow yoga classes and has been using live music to take her class experience to the next level. She also loves teaching beginners and mellow stretch classes, but bear in mind, most of her classes are powerful and energetic, so be prepared if you visit the yoga room in Tulsa to go the next level, to go the distance. The yoga room provides about 40 classes a week, so there's sure to be a class for you. I enjoy taking classes so much there and wanted to invite Nicole to be with us tonight. Nicole, are you there?
I am there. I'm here.
Hi, Nicole. Glad to hear you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. How's the weather in Tulsa?
Oh, it's always different. Today we had a cool day and rain, and the weekend was awesome and 90 degrees and swimming. And so if you get bored, if you want to have a creative weather system, you can move to Tulsa. It's always different. It's never boring. I like it. I like it a lot. It does get really hot here in the summer. In a couple months, we'll have everybody will be inside, which will be good for the yoga room because right now it's just, you know, pretty nice out, and we lose a lot of students to playing outside. I understand that. I like to be outside a lot too. So.
Well, I see one way you handle that, though, with your classes. As I mentioned in the introduction, you have so much creativity in your class schedule. One of the things I was noticing that you're sharing with those people in Tulsa that are ready to get outside and have a little fun is rooftop yoga. Is that something you're doing?
Yeah,
now?
Yeah.
How's that going?
It's going great. There's a beautiful outdoor space on a main street, a real popular street called Cherry Street, that's filled with restaurants and bars. And this rooftop area is big enough to accommodate 60 students or 40 with a band. It has a beautiful view of downtown. And on Saturday mornings, it's above the farmer's market. So it's a great, hip, cultural area to teach yoga. I know one of the owners of the building, so we all came up with an idea to do rooftop. And, you know, sometimes it's called Vino and Vinyasa. You know, we do a evening class on Thursday night, and we provide wine, or we let people bring wine, and we do a little wine and then a fun yoga class with modern music, you know, and then maybe a little after party. I mean, just kind of try to shake it up. There's a beautiful museum in Tulsa called the Philbrook that is a big open yard in the front, and I've done a lot of classes there. And then Tulsa just added this awesome family-friendly space that provides free entertainment, you know, like bands on Sundays. And I've taught a lot of classes out there. It's called Guthrie Green. And it's just a really open space where families can come and people can come and do anything free. You can't charge for anything there. So I've done a lot of yoga classes for free. And you can get up to 150 people out there. And so that's really good because it's opened the door for people who are afraid to try yoga, going to a yoga studio. You really have nothing to lose when you're at a park with you're not paying any fee, and you can come and go as you want, and you can give it a shot, you know. So in Tulsa, it was a difficult starter to start yoga in Tulsa. Not that we actually started it from square one, but to open a yoga studio in Tulsa was pretty risky because people were afraid of yoga because of, you know, their religious background, or they're just not into trying new things like that. So a little like they're into their workout and that's working. And so I'm happy to do anything that breaks that wall down with a new student and a yoga class to get them in the door, because it's not as scary as it sounds, you know?
Right, right. That is the scariest part, though, is that first class. So I love how you're putting them out where people can see, because if it's, say, 7 years ago when I first got into yoga, had I seen a yoga class in a park, I would have been all about it. I may have wanted to watch versus having the nerve to jump right in there, but because I was truly fearful that I would go in there and just make an idiot of myself. So I love how you're taking the yoga outside the studio. We have an organization in Jacksonville, and I definitely don't think it's exclusive to Jacksonville, but it's called Guerrilla Yoga, and that is their mission, is to take yoga out of the studio walls. So thank you for doing that, because there are a lot of people like me that are just so afraid of yoga because it's mysterious and magical. Now, how did you find yoga? How long have you been doing yoga? Tell us a little bit about that side of it.
Well, it's amazing that I found it. I've been a runner since I was about 8 years old, and then I've been I was a waitress from 16 to 35. And so those two combinations, those two things are perfect recipe for a really tight, rigid, stressed person, because there's a lot of tightness in the shoulders, carrying trays, you have to move fast, there's a lot of stress at the, you know, in the restaurant world. And then running is pretty intense, you know, it's like, especially if you have a tight schedule and you're trying to get a run in really early or late at night or on vacation. And so I was that person. So it's amazing that I found yoga, but I had to, because I could not continue that schedule without bringing something in like yoga or massage or meditation. And it's hard to start with meditation, you know. So I basically forced myself into yoga because I thought there's no way I can continue moving about the world this way, or I'm just going to break. I'm just going to break. And so when I was 28, I started doing a little class here and there. I didn't really like it. I just knew I needed it. And then and then I did that for a couple months, really. And then I moved to Santa Cruz, California with my new husband. And there was yoga every corner, like churches in Tulsa on every corner. There was so much yoga, you could not avoid it. It was there, and everybody did it, and you see just what you did. So I started running to the studios and doing yoga. And I literally looked at the clock, you know, from the moment I'd enter, because it was hard for me. When the tighter you are, the more active you are, it takes a while to break that down. So it was really hard. It was just determination. It wasn't love at first sight at all. But I had a teacher in Santa Cruz that was a dancer too, and so she wanted to do a yoga dance performance. And so she asked people to volunteer to be part of this choreographed yoga class and with music, and I knew right then Well, I didn't know until I took the first class, and I said, this is what I was born to do. And what I'm more interested in than yoga is music. I love music and musicians and live music and concerts, and I just love music. So I thought, if I can do music and yoga together, that can be my thing. And so that's basically another thing other than outdoor yoga that's brought a lot of people, more than outdoor yoga, is a class that I teach called Rock and Roll Yoga. And it has just opened the door to so many people who would be afraid to go to a yoga class. They're like, well, rock and roll. And it's kind of a cardio yoga class. So it's a non-traditional, fun music. I wear a microphone. You feel like you're dancing sometimes. You feel like you're doing aerobics sometimes. But you're doing all yoga poses to modern music. And then, you know, people would get addicted to that or get interested in that. And then they would come to a regular class, or they would say, well, I can't come Friday night to rock and roll. Maybe I'll come to the morning class. And it was a great entry for people who are afraid of yoga. So I was a little afraid of yoga, too. But in Santa Cruz, it was like nothing to be afraid of, because everybody did it. You know, all the cool kids did it. So I wanted to be that. And then over the course of that year or two, my body finally just started accepting it. And then I was addicted. So then I moved back to Tulsa, And I wasn't going to teach yoga. I was just going to go back to waitressing, you know, just being a waitress. That's what I was. But there was not many yoga classes. So my husband at the time said, go out to Mount Madonna and take that 1 month training at the month. And it's intense. It starts at 4 or 5:30 in the morning, you know, and then it ends at night. It's long and it's intense. And it's not just about yoga poses. It's about the whole culture and,
right,
you know, meditation and cleansing and the lifestyle of yoga and the history and philosophy of yoga. So it's a whole training. It's really, really good. Even if you're not going to teach yoga, it's great to have that. If you're interested in yoga, do a teacher training. It'll take you to a 5 different levels farther than you are.
Yeah,
that's my suggestion.
Yeah.
Any listener that's interested in yoga and really, really wants to learn more, then do a teacher training. And then I came back and started teaching one person at a time at a gym. And it was kind of, you know, I was kind of glad no one came because I was nervous as hell. And then I outgrew that studio, and that was in 2000, and I opened a small studio that fit 12 comfortably, 17 really tight, and outgrew that in a year. And people said, if you're in business in a year, I'll throw you a party, or, you know, I'd be surprised, just because yoga's not going to come, it's not going to work in this town. And a year later, one of my customers from I still waited tables at a diner, said, I have a really cool building in a really hip area town, and I'll give you a really good price. And I just jumped on it. If it wasn't for him and that connection, I don't know if I would have been successful, because it was a huge space, 2,700 square feet. I'm still there 13 years later. And it opened the door to anybody can come. We don't have a space limitation. We can do all kinds of classes. And it was definitely the pioneer yoga studio in Tulsa, and it did take a while before it earned money, you know, but it was passion, a labor of love, and my husband did a lot of the, you know, just kind of he was the custodian and the banker, and he would teach a little bit, and I would teach a lot of classes and manage the teachers, and there's, you know, 15 to 17 teachers, and it was a lot of work, a lot of retail. But now I've narrowed it down to I'm the only owner now, and it's ran by me and my staff of teachers that are awesome. They're all certified in very creative certifications, like Jiva Mukti from New York and Anasara and Buddhakan, which is a martial arts kind of yoga, and Sri Daiva is a new style that spun off of Anasara. So there's lots of different kinds. Iyengar yoga, it's a hard to find a certified Iyengar teacher. I have one of the only ones in Tulsa. I'm proud of my teachers. I'm more of the fun teacher, like you were saying. I'm more of the, you know, just the workout class. And I like to keep it light. I don't talk about philosophy. I don't try to do too much of that. I just, you know, I'm in the Bible Belt. I just keep it simple and try to get them to come back. And then I pass them off to the other teachers, and they keep them coming back, you know?
Well, it certainly kept me coming back. My goal when we were there for those couple of weeks, when I looked at your awesome schedule and the huge variety of classes, I wanted to get a little bit of it all. So I certainly tried to structure my weeks while I was in Tulsa so I could check out a lot of different types of the yoga classes that you provide. And your amazing staff, you, as you just mentioned, hats off to those ladies and gentlemen. Those guys rock it. They were amazing.
They are so good. Best
you
and
have,
best around.
You have, I would certainly agree with you there. And Harry has a quick question for you, Nicole. He gave me that signal.
I just a comment. You know, I was born and raised in Tulsa. When I grew up in Tulsa, it was a very, very, very progressive town. I mean, we had the arts proliferated everywhere. We had public parks. I mean, it was a very, very progressive town and or a city. And it switched. And I'm not saying it switched for the good or bad, but it switched. And I started teaching the martial arts in the 1970s. And I faced, a lot of us did. Now, Dale Cook is still there, and he's very prominent. Mm-hmm. But we faced some of the same opposition to people thinking it was something mystical and magical in the martial arts.
Yeah.
It's really not what you know, the demon seed that a lot of people think or thought it was back then. So you know, I, when we came back this last year, I was really encouraged. I'd like to see people like yourself that is encouraging people to better their lives. We went down to Guthrie Park, and that was just phenomenal to me. That reminds me of the Tulsa I grew up in. And in,
the 80s,
it changed. And
I see
maybe it coming back, and it really gives me hope that my hometown is finally coming back to understanding there is a place for everybody, that the freedom is just not for a few, and that a progressive lifestyle, a progressive way of thinking is really better for the community. I mean, Robin even commented how many parks there were in Tulsa. She's never seen that many parks. I mean, it was a progressive city. So I just want to thank you for making a wonderful, wonderful contribution to my hometown.
Oh.
So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure doing that because I was considering staying in California, you know, maybe getting a teacher training and just staying there where everybody else is teaching yoga, because that would have been the easy way to just enter into a teaching role. But to go to Tulsa and say, okay, let's try to do it here, it was rough. But now we've got more yoga studios, which is better for me because it gets more yoga in the community. They're not so afraid of it. And you're right, there's lots of parks popping up, lots of live music coming out, outdoor music scenes. That always makes more progressive thinkers, more culture, and lots of art downtown. So Tulsa is booming right now and blooming in a really good direction. So I'm happy to be a part of it.
Well, you picked the perfect place. I mean, Brookside, when I grew up, was known as the Restless Ribbon. And you could, you know, it wasn't unheard of to see, you know, Leon Russell driving his rolls down the street or popping into a club, and you'd see Leon Russell or Eric Clapton or even George Harrison. And I think that people like you are bringing, progress back to my hometown. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that. It feels good.
Well, y'all both definitely have a love for a beautiful place. It was spring when we were there, and Tulsa was showing off for us, just everything blooming. As you mentioned, the Philbrook and that space, that area is incredible. So you do have a beautiful place to bring yoga to the public, to bring yoga to the people. You really do.
Yeah.
And the rooftop yoga is great. The music that you've used. Now, I know I did a couple of the rock and roll classes with you and the Sweat It Out class and what have you. And it is fun when you go and you do have some loud pumping music. But what's awesome is, as you mentioned, you have your other instructors, but if you want more philosophy, it's there. I even took the sensual anatomy of yoga class, that the workshop that you provided whenever I was there. So there's so many different facets, and rather than you just going, I don't know, I'm not, you know, I don't really want to teach that myself, you're stepping out and you're bringing those in that do a dynamic job doing the different types of instruction.
We've had some really great yoga instructors from all around the world come. Just recently we had Cameron Shane from L.A., Miami. He's got a school in Miami, teaches in L.A. Budokan is his creation. And we had him just a couple months ago, and he was just amazing. We've had Beryl Bender Burt, who's been teaching for 40 years. We've recently had Manorma, who's one of the most profound, prolific Sanskrit teachers in the country. And you know, it's hard to bring those big hitters in because we're not like mainstream yet. It's still yoga is still a little off, but if people get a chance to take a class from almost a master, you know, like a yoga teacher who's been really studied and really creative, it gets them hooked so quick that they can't not come back. So we've been lucky to have some of those great, almost rock star teachers, you know, from the state.
Well, I would venture to say that is absolutely true, and I know that if you have people that have had a yoga practice for a while and they're very familiar with those names and those people, that will bring them there. But you just, you know, as long as you keep doing what you're doing with that music, providing the different level classes, I can just see you growing that studio. I know I mentioned to a friend that I'm a business partner with when we were in Tulsa, I just mentioned where I was going to go to take yoga the next morning, and she was like, oh, the yoga room? So it has quite a reputation in the Tulsa community. So do know that. I mean, I felt kind of like, well, yes, the yoga room, and I just stood up taller and was just very happy to be going to a yoga room that has such a nice reputation. So be aware of that. Know that there's already a lot of good things being said about the yoga room. Now, I did want to ask you, because when you come into your studio, and it is such a beautiful space, as soon as you walk in, you're just surrounded by great mojo, and it's such a nice, airy, open space, and you do just enjoy being there. And the type of music that you play, you know, you were mentioning music is such an important part of your practice and of all the classes that are given there. Now, are you a musician yourself, Nicole?
I'm not, and I think that might be why I tend to be so interested and moved by music, because it's my only way to it. You know, I can't create it. I can't deliver it. But I like to research and find new music and be one of those people who, when I teach a class, people will come up to me after class and say, you know, I want a copy of your playlist, or what song was that third song? We're doing Bach bends, and it happens a lot. And I feel proud, I hate to say, because I think that was one of my talents, is to find music and to do things cool with music. So especially with the younger students, you know, I draw a crowd. I'm popular with teenagers, and I think that's because I have a really young taste in music. I also like to play old, you know, some old classics, but mostly, you know, what's fresh, what's new, what's coming up. And so you can come to my class, one of my fun classes, like a rock and roll or hip hop, or sweat it out class, not necessarily a traditional class, but and like hear about or listen to new stuff that just came out. So it's fun for me. I mean, I guess it's a hobby of mine to find music and to listen. You know, everywhere I go, I notice the music at the place, at a restaurant, at a bar, at a party. I notice what's playing, if it's working or not. If it's loud enough, it's not loud enough. You know, that's what I do. I don't know why, but it's just my thing.
That's your passion. And as you mentioned, we were talking earlier, and even though yoga is your career, yoga is your profession, and if you practice yoga, it's part of your cellular structure, I really believe, but you're part of other things as well, music being one of them. And we mentioned certain charities that you've been involved with in the past and what have you. So it's just having that rounded personality, getting out, exploring, researching, because as I've come to learn in life, if you're not growing and increasing your knowledge base and adding to your knowledge base, a lot of people may think they're just coasting along, but generally you're not. Generally, you're coasting more on a little bit of a downward trend. So whether it be music, whether it be volunteering for somewhere, as long as you're adding positive experiences to your life, you're helping yourself, you're growing, right?
Right. Yeah, I do enjoy yoga. I mean, obviously, I like to take classes. I like to teach classes, but I do a lot of other things. I try not to do too much yoga. I really do go home and try to put it down and not sit at the computer and figure out how I can work more. So there's this, for me, as a waitress most of my life, there was such an easy way to clock out. You clock out, and you go home, and you don't keep waiting tables when you go home, and you don't have to figure out anything for the restaurant. So it's such a clean break. And I was so accustomed to that when you own anything, you never are done. So you always have that ticking in the back of your mind. So it's really been more therapeutic for me to let the studio run itself, to let the teacher, empower the teachers to take charge and find subs for each other and do things for each other and have a lot of volunteers, you know. And so I can have time to play. And my play is hanging out with my dog, my friends, my boyfriend, having free time, not making a lot of plans, and just I don't have any kids, so I don't have a lot of responsibility. You know, I have a job that, you know, I've figured out a way to juggle, and I do not that much traveling anymore because I've done so much all my life. I like to, you know, just go for runs and rollerblade and, you know, play and not have – I love it when somebody's like, well, what are you guys doing this weekend? I'm like, nothing. I mean, we do a lot, but we don't know what we're going to do. It just comes up. We start somewhere and we end in a totally different place. And I think that's one thing that I really enjoy about my life, that it's unstructured in that way. I really don't know what tomorrow's going to look like. I have no idea. And most people, and it almost seems more and more now, are so busy and so structured and so scheduled that they don't have a chance to ever really just go with the flow. Like, well, I'm not sure how the day's going to line up, but let's just go with it and see. And I feel sorry for people in that. And I think the yoga has taught me to let go of being so figuring out how everything's going to land and whether this is going to be successful or that, and just going with it and being light and not stressed out. I don't stress. I used to. That was who I was. But I hope that the yoga, more than just gets the bodies and the minds in shape, they teach people how to just relax in their life and enjoy it, not just, you know, not just chill on the couch. I mean, I can't even tell you the last time I've done that, but enjoy every little cool thing, because there's so much awesome stuff happening, you know. And if you're free, if you're constantly scheduled and you're adding on, not that adding on positive elements, but I love that, but like scheduling yourself so scheduled, you don't have a chance to really just really, I hate to use the cliche, smell the roses. So I've been doing that a lot in the last couple of years, or really the last year. I got divorced 2 years ago, and that was a little bit of a, you know, a relationship that wasn't necessarily the healthy one for me, and I felt like, so I stayed real busy. And now I'm unbusy, and I think it's a result of, you know, just being happy.
Nicole, I have a question. Two questions, actually. How long before you turned a profit, and this is a business side because that's where I naturally tend to go, how long you opened a business on day one, how long did it take you to develop a profit?
Well, you know, when we opened, we were kind of like in the red because we had to buy mats, we had to pay, you know, a bigger rent, we had to buy a stereo and blah, blah, blah. So I don't know if you can count that behind part, but I asked, you know, let's say five teachers, five women who all, most of them still work for me or still work at the yoga room. I hate saying work for me, work at the yoga room. They would teach for free. So
right.
It was kind of like, let's do this together and get this balloon off the ground, and then we can all fly with it, you know? And so the first couple months, maybe it took, let's just say, 5 months before money started appearing in the account. The teachers did probably free classes for 2 months. We were able to start paying them after two months. And start getting a little money for ourselves. And within a year, we were looking okay. And then within 5 years, we were looking really good. And then we had our best year. And 10 years later was our best year, followed by our worst year.
Exactly. That's what I wanted to point out, is because too often times in business today, people are afraid to go out and start something because they may not make any money for 2 months or 3 months or even a year.
Yeah.
And now you made it, and your best year was 10 years later. That's the power of persistency. And the second question I have is, imagine if you could teach that dream through yoga, that people could live their dreams, how much better off would our society, would our world be if, let's just say, half the people could structure their lives, earlier their lives, the way that you've been able to do the last 10 years.
Oh, it would be amazing to see and to experience and to see that in strangers' eyes, because I feel like so many people are working a job or an occupation, or they're doing something that they don't really feel is their karma, or it's not supposed to be, it's not their thing. It's something that they do so they can live in a house and have a car and beat a child, but they don't love it. They don't even like it. They hate it. You can see that in their face. So for me, if more people could live, work a job that they feel self-actualized and skilled, they feel good at, there's nothing like feeling like you're doing something well, like you're supposed to do this, you know, it's just hole in one. Yeah, it would be beautiful if more people would go after their dream versus what they think they need to make financially.
It's scary. It's a challenge, but it can be life-changing if you can begin to, as you were speaking of, Nicole, live in the present moment. If we do not look so far in the future every day and just lose that day we're in, or look back in the past and beat ourselves up perhaps for something in the past, but live in that moment, smell those roses, like you said, and you know, I told you when I asked you if you could join us tonight, oh, we'll chat about 10 minutes. And, you know, we've gone on here about 30 minutes, and I think I could talk to you for another 30. But, you know, I don't want to tie up the complete night and keep you from anything. But before we go, one of the things that I did find really interesting was your ravens throughout your studio. And you have that one sitting on the ledge with the light shining up on him, and you've got that shadow of a raven on your wall, and I bought one of your cool little hoodies that have a slogan on them, and the raven, and nevermore, you know, will I waste this body, will I waste this opportunity? So again, that speaks to the present moment again. But before we take off, will you share, you shared a story with me about having that artwork done to get your logo when you revamped the studio a couple of years ago. Do you mind sharing that story with us, Nicole, before we end tonight?
Sure. You know, I really think, and I was thinking about it today because I had a feeling you were going to ask me, that I started connecting with ravens and birds in general because I did feel in my life there was oppression, there was some restriction that I wasn't able to fly. You know, I was able to teach yoga and I had friends, but in my relationship it wasn't free for me. I felt restricted, and I didn't know that was the translation. I didn't know why I was so drawn to birds towards the end of my marriage, but I started connecting with them and looking at them and seeing mostly the crows. I don't know why. The crows always, they're pretty. And they're usually not very popular bird. But I went to Santa Fe, and there's you know, beautiful ravens. They're the biggest birds, and they're black, almost blue-black. And it's kind of stole my heart. And when I was running one time, and these ravens flew by me really close, and I just started, and this sounds corny, but it was one of those moments I just kind of stretched my arms out like I was flying. And I said, take me with you. And I really wanted that at the time. Like, I wanted to be taken away from something. I didn't know what yet. And then I met this artist at an art function, and I bought some art from him. He's a really cool, edgy, new artist. And he did, I love dogs, too, and he did this cool dog. I bought it. And then, you know, we were just talking, and I just said, paint me a white raven. And he said, oh, I love a challenge. And when the words came out of my mouth, I'd never even heard them together before. I'd never heard white and raven go together. It was like it came to me from some other place. So he was inspired. I was inspired to see what would happen. And then my ex-husband and I were going through, we had already gone through the divorce, we're going to the dividing of the studio to see who was going to get it. We were not fighting, but we were mediating back and forth with a mediator and a lawyer, to see, you know, how it was going to play out, who was going to end up with the studio, and how much that was going to cost the other person, you know, doing financial things, doing, you know, just, so that went on for like 2 months, and finally mediation, and then my artist just calls me, and he says, Nicole, and I said, yeah, who's this? He said, oh, it's Chris Mantle, you know, the one who did the painting that you bought at the art function. I said, oh, yeah, and he goes, I have your white raven, and I said, oh, okay, because, you know, I didn't know how long it would take, and I kind of forgot about it. You know, I was in a lot of things at the time.
Yeah.
And he goes, where are you? And I said, I told him my address, where I was at a friend's house. He goes, oh, I'm only a block away. I'll be there in a minute. So he gets out of the car, and he's walking up, and I see him walking from the car to the house, and he's holding this painting facing me, and I just said, that's it. Like, that's prettier than I envisioned. Like, that is the coolest thing. It's like black background, white raven, perfect. As soon as he hands it to me, within about 5 minutes, I get a call from the mediator and the lawyer and say, we got a deal. And so what it felt like to me was, it was a messenger. It was like the bird,
yeah,
the messenger bird that was saying, here's the news. You're going to take this over, and it's going to be just right. Like, it made me feel like, ah, everything is exactly how it should be. And so, you know, so the saga continues, because I've lately been, after the, you know, the first, the ravens flying with them in my mind, and feeling like I was a caged bird, and then getting out of that relationship and feeling free and, like, really connecting with that animal, and then having that painting sitting, you know, overlooking the studio. I just started bringing more ravens in. The more raven essence I brought in, it felt like we were all as a studio able to be free in the how we created it and what we were going to do with it and how we were going to teach. And that was also translating that to the student. Like, you're free, you know, you're free to do whatever you want. Like, live your life however you want. You know, there's just this essence of flying, and it just feels really good. So
it does.
So I put it on the shirt. I put it on the shirt, and every time I see it on the shirt, I think, that's cool. You know, it just is. So I'm happy
about
that.
It is cool. It is cool, and that is such a wonderful story. It was, excuse me, just that confirmation that you needed at just the right time, that you had to take those first few steps without it, and you did that.
Yeah.
And I think tonight our listeners should have found inspiration by listening to your story, by knowing that it's okay to follow your dream and want to fly. Some of us are even just afraid to try to fly. So, Nicole, I thank you so much for flying. I thank you so much for sharing your gift of yoga with Tulsa, at Brookside. And I guarantee you, next time we're in town, I will be there.
Yay, I'm excited to see you again. Got to get Harry in there next time.
I know. Well, I don't know about that. From what I understand, you are very, very good, and I'm an old guy, and I don't want to fall on my face too much. But, Nicole, your story has impressed me, and I do not want to go on to the other segments right now. What I do want to do, though, is two things. One, if anybody's sitting on the fence and they're wanting to know, well, should I follow my dream or not, what would you tell them to look for? You had the raven. You had a bird.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that everybody has that gift that's given to them to say, okay, here's what I got to do. Here's a path I got to follow?
I think everybody has intuition, whether they are sensitive to it or not. And there's, you know, they say in the middle of the night, listen to the whispers. Like, what do you hear in the middle of the night? You know, you wake up and there's always this voice. Like, I had that voice when I was married in a wrong relationship. I would be like, this isn't right, but I just carry on. You know, I was afraid to change. But also sometimes those whispers are not what you want to hear. They're really daunting. But yeah, I think everybody has either strong intuition, or subtle or strong intuition, or they have arrows pointing that they just need to follow. And there's so much distraction and so much fear that it takes a while to clear the area before someone really can. And there's few people, and I'm not saying I'm one of them, that'll just really dive in. But, you know, if you just keep kind of sitting back and things are falling into place, then, yeah, I think, well, the universe has got me on this. And if the universe didn't have me, I wouldn't be doing this. So I just trust everything is being taken care of behind the scenes, and I'm just going with that. I'm in the right place because I am there, not because I made that happen. I'm just going with that flow. And a lot of people go against the flow. You know, their flow is is easy, it's downstream, but they start swimming backwards because they think they have to work so hard. It has to be hard for it to be worthy. It doesn't.
Well put. Well, very well put. Now, how does someone get a hold of you? Tell our listeners, how in the world can they get a hold of you and learn from you, not only yoga, but your wisdom in life?
The Yoga Room website is a great avenue of finding out what I'm doing and interested in, and my diet and my dog's obsession and stuff like that. And it's theyogaroomtulsa.com. You have to put in theyogaroomtulsa.com, and then on there you can even email me. Clean, I always respond to emails.
Well, I don't know how often it happens, but I know when I was there, I was privileged to do a yoga class with Heidi, your beautiful rescue
dog.
Mm-hmm. And that was a great experience. It really was.
Yeah.
So you never know what you're going to get when you go to the yoga room. And if any of our listeners want to plan a trip to Tulsa and want to make sure you squeeze in some yoga, check out that website. I'll let you say it one more time for me, Nicole.
TheYogaRoomTulsa.com.
Excellent. And it is a great website. I know I told Alyssa when I was there, I just happened to mention the website as how user-friendly it was and how you could bop around and find out what you needed.
Oh,
she was thrilled.
He did it.
She was so thrilled, and I had no idea. I had no idea. So, and she gave some incredible classes as well. I took two or three of her classes.
I got lucky when I met her. She's the best.
Wow. Yeah. Beautiful. Well, you're a lucky lady, if you want to use that term, but you're certainly, I'm lucky. I'm blessed. I am just thrilled that you're in my life. I'm so privileged to be able to call you a friend, and you just keep out there getting it done and sharing yoga with Tulsa and the world and making this a better place, Nicole.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you for joining us. You take care, and we'll talk soon. I'll find a reason to come to Tulsa soon, I hope.
Okay. We'll look forward to seeing you then.
All right.
Take care.
All right, Nicole. Good night, Nicole.
Okay, bye, Harry. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. You know, Robin, there's three kinds of people in the world, and, you know, we started the show off with some news that I wanted people to be aware of, because the three kinds of people are those who make things happen, and there are those who watch things happen, and then the third type are those who wonder what happened. And I do not want our listeners to wonder what happened. And then we end the show tonight, or basically the last part of the show, we listen to Nicole, and Nicole is one of those people that make things happen. And life is just so exciting when you have people in your life like that.
It is, and I know that as we continue each week to bring the show to our listeners, that is your goal, that is your heart, is to help people open their eyes, look around, and see what's going on. Because if you're lulled into some complacency and you don't look and you don't have any idea what's going on around us, you are going to be one of those people that wake up and will go, what happened? So thank you for bringing that to us. We have a few more minutes left on our show tonight. What other nuggets of wisdom did you have for us tonight, Harry?
Well, you know, he's passed, and I think he passed in 1955, but a guy that a lot of people talk about is Dale Carnegie. And let me talk about his 10, he had some highlights on, he wrote this book that a lot of people like, and I've read it and I like it. It's called How to Win Friends and Influence People. And I want to give you, or our listeners and you, 10 of the highlights from that book. And the first thing he says is, when you meet people, begin with praise and honest appreciation. Now, begin with praise and honest appreciation. Number two, call attention to people's mistakes indirectly. Too often times we just come out and tell people, hey, you're fat. People's mistakes need to be handled indirectly. Number three, think about your own mistakes before criticizing the other person. And that's one thing I do like about a lot of leaders. They're willing to admit their fallibility. Number four, ask questions instead of giving direct orders. Number five, let the other person save face. You know, the world champion Tommy Williams taught me that. Try to beat every opponent by one point, thereby saving face. Number six, praise the slightest improvement and praise every improvement. Now, that's tremendous. Number seven, give the other person a fine reputation to live up to. Number eight, use encouragement. Number nine, make the fault easy to correct. And number 10, make the other person happy about doing the thing you suggest. So I just wanted the people out there to understand those the 10 highlights of the book, and what he believed in is how to win friends and influence people. So I guess now we can end our segment as we always do.
With some beautiful Amy Hendrickson. How about some small town tyranny?
I don't know if you've talked to her or anything. I have.
Or how about Harry? You know, I get a little confused sometimes. We can't end tonight's show without our usual
news.
Yes, we can end it. It's our show. We can end it with weird news. I love weird news or weird information, as you may have it. You know, a church leader in Florida has urged parishioners to have sex every day for a month to help cut America's high divorce rate. Pastor Paul Wright, the head pastor of the Relevant Church in Newber City outside of Tampa, delivered his 30-day sex challenge to churchgoers on Sunday. Now, that's a church you can believe in.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I don't know if you...
Amy, take us out of here.
Why, what's she doing?
Oh, and so then I told her. What did you say?
Yeah, and so I told her.
Well, what did you say?
Well...
Broken heart and all its broken hearts. I'm free from the small town tyranny. Yeah. Every day is just the same. Looking for someone to blame. Well, it's up and down and right is wrong again. it's up and down in love.